The following is presented by Le Sommet Coors Light, celebrity guests, entertainment, and oh, a bit of sports. Every Wednesday night on RDS.
An Italian friend of mine, I loved Adriano Panatta, who was an Italian player back in the 70s, won the French Open. But Raj, I mean, what can you say? I mean, he's everything you'd ever want. I've said a million times that when I started, McEnroe, Connors, Garolaitis, Nastasia, they were all jerks. They were A1 you-know-whats. And I always thought 30, 40 years from now, heaven knows what it'll be. And what do you got? I mean, Rafa's a really nice guy, totally down to earth, more down to earth you could ever imagine anybody. Federer is great. Djokovic is a very charming guy. Andy Murray, salt of the earth. I love him. So all these guys now are terrific. And, 40 years ago, they were jerks. I thought the progression would be in the negative way, but it's been in a very positive way.
What a treat to have Tom Tebbit in studio following Canada's win at the Federation Cup up at Parc Jarry. Tom telling us who his all-time favorite player is, Roger Federer. On Melnick in the afternoon, it's hour number 4. Mitch Melnick, Rod Francis, Mitch Gallo take you to 7. Playground Poker with Connor and the gang at 7. Noel Butler, full hour of soccer talk at Oranges at halftime. And then more soccer with the Impact this week and Joey Alfieri at 8. Face-off time in Toronto 1 hour from now.
Michael Farber on Melnick in the afternoon, brought to you by Morella's Restaurant, with an open kitchen concept, charcoal fire pit, and a wood-burning pizza oven from Napoli. Route 132 next to Poker Palace.
Hello there, Michael. How you doing?
You know what? I hadn't heard the name Adriano Panatta in years. Yeah. And I'll tell you a quick story.
Sure.
I worked in tennis in 1974.
I remember.
And at that time, Adriano Panatta was dating one of the Rossellini twins. I don't know if it was Isabella or the other one. They kind of look similar.
Isabella or the other one.
It's the other one. It's the other one. I can't remember the other one's name. These were Ingrid Bergman's daughters.
Right.
And I met them in a tournament in Philadelphia, and I said to young Miss Rossellini, "Oh, your mother's the most beautiful woman in the world." Not, "Oh, you're lovely," but, "Oh, your mother is beautiful," because I was a charmer even then.
Yeah, you were young and stupid.
Yeah, I was.
But she was.
Ingrid Bergman.
Oh, yeah. Casablanca?
Oh.
Yep. You can see why Rick got so screwed up inside. All right, where do you want to start? You want to start with Tout le monde en parle and the general manager of the Canadiens? You want to start with Jenny Bouchard? Anything, whatever you want.
Yeah, let's start with TV last night, Tout le monde en parle, and Marc Bergevin looking very spiffy in a pink shirt and looking good. And didn't make a lot of news, but did say Trevor Timmins would be running the draft and hinted that there might be other changes. We got more attitude, we got lack of offense, some problems with defense, and then Carey Price wasn't very good. And he a couple times said, I'm responsible, but yeah, I never got the sense that he really believes that. I think he likes saying it because he knows it's the right thing. And as competent as most of the questioning was, it didn't get into the basic flawed nature of his construction of this club. So there we are. But we do know Trevor Timmins is going to be running the draft.
Well, we're still waiting. Yeah, there's definitely going to be some changes, you would imagine, in his in upper management, the people who surround him, and also the coaching staff. I'm not sure whose contracts are up. I think at least one of the coaches is up. There's got to be, you'd think after a season plus that Claude Julien will name his own coach.
You would think so. And the only thing I am certain of, because he told me, Kirk Muller has another year left. Doesn't mean you have a job. He can get paid for not working in this screwy world. But I expect him to be back. The guy on the hot seat, I would presume, would be J.J. Daigneault. They threw Sylvain Lefebvre overboard last week, which was kind of an easy thing to do. If he resurfaced as the coach of the defense, I wouldn't mind. He did a pretty good job when he was doing that in Denver. I doubt that will happen. But it looks like, to me, given what went on, that J.J. Daigneault, an old friend of Bergevin, might be in some trouble.
Well, you talk about the construction of the team. All you got to do is look at the we're all waiting. It's hard to imagine outside of the Stanley Cup final a better series than what we're going to see in round two between Winnipeg and Nashville. And look at the center ice position for both teams.
Yeah.
I mean, and look at the Canadiens. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's just ridiculous that the Canadian center ice position is where it is in comparison to other teams around the NHL. Yes. When was the last time you saw an NHL team, Michael Farber, without a one or a two down the middle?
A good NHL team?
Yeah, a decent NHL team, a competitive NHL team without two centers.
We'll go back to the Ducks that won the Cup in 07. You know, that was an interesting construction because that was Pronger back there with Niedermeyer. Pronger had left Edmonton. Niedermeyer was there, had a really strong third line. Their number one center was Andy McDonald, who was a useful point getter, but not an overwhelming number one center. Their number two was a still young and soon to be great Ryan Getzlaff. He wasn't really great at that point, but he was on his way. But those were your number one and two centers. On that third line, you had Sammy Paulson and Rob Niedermeyer and Travis Moen. But it was built unconventionally, and it won a cup. There are lots of ways to win a cup, but the way that seems to work best is strength down the middle.
Andy McDonald. I completely forgotten about Andy McDonald. He had a 78-point season that year.
Yeah, I mean, he was a point getter. Remember, there were people getting more points than him. And Teemu Selänne had come back, probably the greatest free agent bargain of all times. The Ducks signed him for $1 million. Selänne wasn't even sure he wanted to play coming back from the lockout and injury, and there he was. An important contributor. I believe he scored 40 goals.
He scored 48.
Yeah.
48 goals, 94 points. So I'm just staring at this roster. Andy McDonald. I could have sat here for the next 9 hours and not remembered him. Andy McDonald, Ryan Getzlaff, who was 21, Sammy Paulson, and Todd Marchand. Those are your four center. If the Canadiens could come close to that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's four deep. That's four effective centermen deep.
Yeah, it was. But it was without what we think of as the big 1-2 punch.
Right.
That we've seen in Pittsburgh for a couple of years, or what Colorado had, or what Detroit had in their cup years, or what Winnipeg has. So, you know, right now, Winnipeg, you look at Scheifele and Stastny, you know, that's pretty serious stuff. Are you excited about that second round series?
I am. I wish it was the Western Final.
You know what? I like it. I like it where it is. And this is why I like it, because the best hockey I've ever seen, playoff hockey I've ever seen, has occurred when you had to play your way out of the division. And I bet you would find it difficult to disagree with some of the series that Montreal had to play in the 80s, getting through Quebec, getting through Boston, at times getting through Hartford. The craziness in the Norris division, these teams would beat each other up so badly that by the time they did get to the conference final, they were basically done. What went on with Calgary and Edmonton, the great Patrick division matchups, it was play your way out of the division, and it was the best hockey you can get. What has leached out of the game in the past little while are rivalries. I mean, real rivalries. I mean, blood and guts, and we will see you every spring after the schedule allows us to play you eight times. This is when hockey mattered. It was hockey with an attitude. It was hockey with a sense of menace. It was hockey where you expected something might happen, and it usually did. We're seeing that in Pittsburgh and Philadelphia, but we don't see it in many other places. And this is what division rivalries do. For those of you who said, gee, I wish it could be in the conference final, that we should, it's unfair that the two top teams in the NHL are having to play each other so early. I take you back a year where it was in the Metropolitan Division. People were looking at Pittsburgh and Washington, and Columbus was a powerhouse. And, oh, it's a shame people are going to be knocked out so early. Yeah, it's a shame. Last year it was Metro. This year it is Central. Next year it'll be some other place. In fact, if you believe that these teams should wait as long as possible and should be rewarded for the regular season, why shouldn't they play or have the chance to play for the Stanley Cup? If you're going to get rid of divisions, and essentially that's what most people want to do because most people say, yeah, let's delay this as long as possible, why do we even have conferences? And don't tell me about the Prince of Wales and Campbell Conference trophies. Why don't we seed 1-16 as they did for a little while in the 1980s until travel made that not feasible? So bring it on and let it stand and let the rivalries bloom once again because the NHL will be better for it.
It's a Gallo. That's music to your ears. We had this discussion early in the show and you were of that opinion.
Yeah, and I like that. You have to get out of your division. I like that aspect like Michael does. And I'm happy that we're guaranteed to see it now. I know round two I'm getting Nashville, Winnipeg, where if you had to wait all the way to the conference final, maybe it doesn't happen at all.
Well, if you look what happened with Edmonton and Calgary, for example, it forced Calgary to get better. It was a time when the league was a meritocracy. And there was no salary cap evening the dance floor. There was no cap floor. There was no cap ceiling. It was about building the best team you can. And unfortunately, Edmonton ran out of money. But Calgary realized that if it was going to do anything, it would have to beat the Edmonton Oilers. So it got better. It thought in different ways. I think circus teams are great for the game. And if they happen to lose in the second round, well, build a better mousetrap the next year. And I love it. I will say this, and if you want to keep the conferences, because there is the long tradition of East versus West, Campbell and Wales and what have you, how would you feel if once teams got to the conference final, you reseeded and played 1-4, 2-3? That way, in theory, you could have a Montreal-Toronto Stanley Cup Final, a Montreal-Boston Stanley Cup Final, a Kings-Duck Stanley Cup Final. How would you feel about that?
I like it.
I love it.
Okay.
Yep.
Don, right. Can you call your pal at Park Avenue and see if he's any more open-minded to that than he appears to be? All right, let me move on to Rutgers, Michael.
Yes.
There is a Bill Belichick. I think there's a lot of guys. I think one year we had five guys playing in the Super Bowl from Rutgers on the Bill Belichick staff. His son actually, rephrased, I'm not going to say his son, the safeties coach now at the New England Patriots was a player at Rutgers, Bill Belichick's son. Played lacrosse first, went to play football, and now he's the safeties coach. I mean, Devin McCourty, Daron Harmon, I mean, Jonathan Freeney over the year, Tyquan Undergood. We had
Logan Ryan.
Logan. I mean, there's probably 10 guys over the last 10 years that were there that played in the Super Bowl one time or another.
Talking about your alma mater with Jamal Westerman of the Montreal Alouettes, who actually did some communications work broadcasting Rutgers.
Yes.
And he was in studio with us for about half an hour on Friday. Had a great time with him and looking forward to connecting beyond that. And, I thought of you the whole time.
Well, Tyquan Underwood, who I think is still with the Owls, a receiver. Another Rutgers guy. Do you know Bill Belichick cut him the night before a Super Bowl? The night before a Super Bowl, he looked at whatever matchup it was, I forget the year, and said, no, we're not going to need this guy. Cut him.
What's worse, cutting a guy the night before the Super Bowl or having a veteran popular guy dressed and standing on the sidelines and never getting in?
Yeah, well, good point. You know, the players that Jamal Westerman's talking about, many of them, played for Greg Schiano, who coached the Tampa Bay Bucks unsuccessfully for a while after Rutgers. He's now the Ohio State defensive coordinator. When I was there, there was a running back named Steve Farragelli.
I loved Steve Farragelli with the Owls. I loved him, yeah.
There was a quarterback named Bruce Van Ness.
Yeah, he played up here, too.
For the Owls.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed. So, you know, there was a Rutgers pipeline. Listen, I had 4 great years. You know, I wish I could say I had 7 great years like Animal House, but I did. I had 4 great years. It's the State University of New Jersey. Don't mistake it for an Ivy League school. My goodness, it wasn't. But I had a great time, and it allowed me to become, in some way, who I am and what I am. And I think fondly of it. That having been said, I think what Rutgers does is nuts. It's in the Big Ten now and chases things that it will never catch and spends far too much money on athletics and is a disappointment because the priorities have gotten skewed. And that's coming from a sports journalist.
Michael Farber with us every Monday at 6:05. Thanks for dropping Steve Farragelli's name. I loved him as a player. He served a really cold beer at Sir Winston's.
Yep.
He worked very hard in the construction industry for the last years of his life. We lost him about a couple of years ago, and he was one of my favorite Alouettes ever.
So. Yeah. You know, when he used to run, at least in college, he would, when he got knocked to the ground, he would kind of turn over onto his back and try to push the ball an extra 6 inches. I loved him for that.
He was one of the guys when they moved into Olympic Stadium and had those like 60,000 crowds. He was one of the guys in the backfield. Have a great week. Thanks as always.
Okay, take care.
Sports Business with Lauren Rubin coming right up.
When the game ends is where they begin. The